March 21st readings. Justin Martyr Dialogue with Trypho, chapters 9-10. The Christians have not believed groundless stories. I excuse and forgive you, my friend, I said, for you do not know what you are saying. You have been persuaded by teachers who do not understand the scriptures, and you speak whatever comes to mind, like a diviner. But if you are willing to listen, I will show you that we have not been deceived and that we will never cease to confess Christ, even if we are mocked or threatened by the most terrible tyrant. Our faith is not based on empty fables or baseless words, but on words filled with the Spirit of God, words powerful and full of grace. At this, those with Trypho laughed and shouted mockingly. I rose to leave, but Trypho grabbed my garment and insisted that I fulfill my promise. I replied, "Then let your companions not be so unruly. If they wish, they can listen in silence. If they have something more important to do, they may leave. But let us withdraw to a quieter place and continue our discussion." Trypho agreed, and we moved to the center of the Xystus. Two of his friends, after ridiculing our zeal, walked away. As we settled on stone seats, Trypho's remaining companions talked among themselves, mentioning the war in Judea. The true objection to Christianity, the law. When they had finished their conversation, I spoke again. My friends, is there any accusation against us besides this, that we do not follow the law? That we are not circumcised in the flesh as your forefathers were? That we do not observe the Sabbath as you do? Or do you also believe the slanders against us, that we eat human flesh, that we engage in immoral acts in darkness after feasting? Or do you condemn us solely because of our beliefs, which you consider false? Trypho replied, "These rumors about you are absurd and unworthy of belief, for they go against human nature. But what amazes us is this. You claim to be pious and to follow God, yet you do not separate yourselves from the nations in any visible way. You do not observe the Jewish festivals, Sabbaths, or circumcision. You place your hope in a man who was crucified and still expect to receive blessings from God, even while rejecting his commandments. Have you not read? That soul shall be cut off from his people who is not circumcised on the eighth day, Genesis 17:14. This command applies to strangers and slaves alike. Yet you have abandoned this covenant, disregarding the duties that come with it. You claim to know God, yet you do not live as those who fear him. If you can explain how you still expect salvation without observing the law, we would gladly listen. We are also prepared to ask other questions." Augustine of Hippo. Confessions, Book 5, Chapter 6. The Source of True Joy. I longed for honor, wealth, and marriage, but, O Lord, you denied me these things, and in doing so, you were more gracious than if you had granted them. You refused to let anything apart from you become sweet to me. Instead, you exposed my soul's wounds so that, turning away from all else, I might be drawn to you, who are above all things, without whom all would be nothing. How wretched I was, yet how patiently you led me to recognize my own misery. The empty pursuit of glory. On the very day that I was preparing to deliver a panegyric for the emperor, where I would recite many lies, and be praised for them by those who knew I was lying, my heart was consumed with anxious ambition. My thoughts boiled feverishly as I walked through the streets of Milan, burdened by desires that only increased my unhappiness. It was then that I noticed a poor beggar on the street. He had likely eaten well that day, and he was laughing, full of joy. I sighed and turned to my friends, speaking of the madness of our pursuits. A beggar's joy and a philosopher's anxiety. Here I was, exhausting myself with ambition, dragging the heavy burden of my own discontent, yet all for the very same happiness that this beggar had already attained. He had received a few coins and was satisfied, while I, with all my desperate striving, sought a joy that was even more false than his. He was joyful. I was anxious. He was carefree. I was full of fears. Yet if someone had asked me whether I would rather be joyful or fearful, I would have answered, joyful. But if asked whether I would rather be the beggar or myself, I would have chosen my own anxious, burdened self, out of sheer perversity. Why? Not because I delighted in wisdom, but because I sought praise from men. Not because I desired truth, but because I wanted approval. For this reason, O Lord, you broke my bones with the rod of your correction. The emptiness of worldly joy. Some may argue, it matters where a man finds his joy. The beggar was happy in drunkenness, while you sought joy and glory. But what kind of glory, O Lord? A glory that was not in you. His joy was false, but so was mine. The difference was that mine enslaved me far worse than his did him. He would sleep off his drunkenness in a single night. I carried my pride from night to night, waking and sleeping with it, never free from its chains. Indeed, it does make a difference where one finds joy, but not in the way I once believed. The joy that comes from faithful hope is beyond comparison to such vanity. The beggar was happier than I. At that moment, the beggar was better off than me. He was happy, while I was torn apart by cares. He gave good wishes and received wine. I lied and pursued pride. I said these things to my friends, and I saw how my soul was faring. I knew that it was unwell, yet I only increased my torment. Even when some measure of success came my way, I could not enjoy it, because as soon as I grasped it, it vanished from my hands. Thomas Aquinas Summa Theologica, Part 1, Question 43. Do the divine persons send and are they sent? Objection. It seems that in the Trinity, no one can be sent, because being sent implies movement or change. Since God is unchanging and eternal, it would seem that none of the divine persons could be sent by another. Responsio. We must say that in God, mission, being sent, does not imply physical movement or change, as it does for creatures. Rather, mission in the divine persons refers to the eternal procession of one person from another, together with a new mode of presence in creation. The Son is sent because he is eternally begotten by the Father, and he comes into the world in the incarnation, dwelling among us in a new way. The Holy Spirit is sent because he eternally proceeds from the Father and the Son, and he comes to dwell in the hearts of the faithful, making them temples of God. This does not mean that the Son or the Spirit were absent before they were sent, rather, their mission signifies a new relationship with creation. As Christ himself said, "As the Father has sent me, I also send you." John 20:21. Just as the Son is sent in the Incarnation, so the Spirit is sent at Pentecost. These missions do not imply inferiority or change in the divine persons but reveal their active presence in the world. A quick summa. Aquinas explains that in the Trinity, being sent does not mean movement or inferiority. The Son is sent into the world through the Incarnation, and the Holy Spirit is sent into believers' hearts. These missions reflect a new mode of presence in creation, not a change in God's nature.